Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Gorgeous Reads. Today we have Angela Meyer, who is the author of Superior Spectre. And welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you so much for having me.
Explain first the title, because it is...
Well, it comes from an Emily Dickinson poem, and it just was one of those titles that came to me sort of partway through the process, and it was just the perfect title for it. So it very much relates to the villain character, really, Jeff, who kind of haunts the life of the other character, Leonora, in a high-tech kind of way.
Yes. And the poem is about, you know, people sort of locking their doors, you know, to keep ghosts out, these external ghosts, when in actual fact...
They come from within.
Yeah. And this is very much a story of an interior haunting.
Exactly. Yeah.
As we shall get into it. Okay. So it has been described as a, you know, sort of dark, fascinating, dystopian novel, similar to Margaret Atwood's A Handmaid's Tale. And I would say that that was quite accurate. Let's get into the story.
Okay. So it's about Jeff, who comes from near future Australia, and he runs away. He's dying. He's carrying a lot of shame, and he runs away to the Scottish Highlands with an experimental technology that allows him to enter the mind of someone in the past. And, you know, because he's dying and he's just sort of idling his time, he kind of abuses this technology. And then the other story is the woman whose mind he enters, who is Leonora, in 19th century Scotland, in the Highlands and then in Edinburgh. And she is really our hero of the novel, I would say. And she begins to become aware of this sort of presence behind her eyes. And so there's a few things going on.
His body is rotting with shame and illness. He dips into a virtual reality-like experience for him. But it is her reality.
Exactly, yes.
And in 1860s, female, unmarried, young woman, there are no words for this.
Yes.
Other than possession and madness.
Yes. So part of her sort of plot thread is what is happening to me. And also having to hide it, because obviously she understands that it would be seen as, you know, madness or and of course, being Edinburgh in the 19th century as well, there's other roads that she sort of looks into, like spiritualism, you know, is it a haunting? And she just has to follow every sort of thread because she wants him out.
And this is a young woman who, her home was her world.
Yes.
The Highlands and her home in the Highlands, she made sense there and she loved it.
Yes.
And then she becomes alienated from home.
Yes. So I kind of deliberately didn't want a sort of hero's journey where they go out seeking something. I really wanted to have a young woman who was actually quite sure of herself as a physical, spiritual, like a whole person. She's curious and she's discovering and she's growing, but she already has a very strong sense of self. And it's the patriarchal elements of her world. It's her father's wishes. It's the city and the idea of coming up in the world. And then of course, Jeff's influence as well, that all is what gets in the way and twists that, and it's her struggling to get back to herself.
So that's the writer in you. You see this nice, well-balanced happy young woman, and you just have to kick her in the teeth till she's right. near dead.
I'm afraid that is how it works. You just have to make things worse for the character.
Just everything was going along fine.
Yes.
Until you tripped her up.
That's right. She was absolutely fine without me.
she gets increasingly alienated because. You know, in the country, in a life, you know, she's deals with the livestock. She's yes. very attuned to all the rhythms of nature, including procreation. Mm-hmm. She's somewhat alienated. She's not alienated by those mm-hmm. rising sexual feelings in her, but she's alienated by what everyone is not allowing her to do
That's
with
right.
them.
That's
it's
right.
the judgment yeah, that what, alienates
what
her.
What she feels is yeah. in an instinctive almost yeah. kind yes. of way. Animal yeah. way, I guess.
In an animalistic way. But yeah, and then she's also alienated because of her gender. Like,
yes.
she doesn't get choices.
No.
You know, and her father's choices sort of push her out of her home
yes.
and push her to Edinburgh. And then she's living with her aunt. She's also... She gets re-alienated from her home again mm. in Edinburgh because not only is she away from her home, but then she finds out that her home and her growing up wasn't exactly
how it happened. Yeah, exactly.
Or how she'd been told.
That's right.
Or led to believe.
Yeah, she'd always had certain narratives. There are certain narratives you're supposed to follow, and there are certain narratives that this is the way things happened. And yeah, so the discoveries are ongoing. The kind of disturbance is sort of ongoing. But I wanted to keep her strong. And also it does have a bit of a sense of humor as well. I
yes.
guess that runs through dark at times. But yeah, and the city, and there's a real, like, I guess I wasn't deliberately setting out to do this, but I noticed as I was writing it that there's a lot of sort of binaries invoked there. So there's the city and the country, and there's male and female, and there's nature and culture. You know, you've got the
university. Yes, and there's a lot of class.
Yes, class.
Structures in there as well.
That's right. So all of those contrasts hopefully are sort of creating lots of tension around the central kind of tensions of the story.
Okay, so that's the past,
mm-hmm.
easily researchable.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about, because there's two bits of tech
yes.
in this.
Yes.
There's another bit of tech that I shall allow readers to discover on
cool.
their own.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the funnest way of things. But the tech that allows him to access Leonora's mind.
Yes.
Did you work that out in the same way as sort of like a logic problem? Like it would have to work like this and it would have to do... How do
yes.
you puzzle that out?
Yeah, it was really, really fun. I've always been interested in neuroscience and psychology more generally. And I was actually at the Edinburgh Book Festival several years ago, and I saw... I'm going to forget the name of the author now, but the book that she wrote is called The Brain Supremacy. And I read that book, and it's a nonfiction book, but it has an almost science fictional element where it's like, these are all the actual possibilities of things that might happen. And there were things like telekinesis and, you know, like that we might actually end up having technology where we can do all of these things. And it was around then that it sort of planted this idea. I think I already had both the characters and I was trying to think about how to link them. So it ended up being this sort of science fiction link where mm-hmm. is she being haunted or is it a man from the future in her mind? And then I worked out the logic of the technology and really thought it through and how it would work when he goes back in time, how much time passes in the present and depending what era he goes back to. And yeah, there were so many layers to work out, even though in the book itself, you get quite scant kind of detail. And yeah, it was fun. It was good fun. And I had a really great editor who, you know, Kate Goldsworthy, at the last minute, there was one aspect where she was like, she totally got the whole logic and, you know, applied it to it. And there was one bit where I made a bit of a mistake and it was so good that she caught it because it was sort of like, shouldn't this much time have passed or, you know, just
right.
a thing some readers would probably notice.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Because and also that is very interesting, that process of what you need to know.
Yes.
And then telling me as a reader, you know, I'm just here for the fun.
Yeah.
I don't need to see your work.
Yes.
And it's incredible how much you do pull back out of that. Like you can see, good. you can feel that it's solid work, but in yet I'm just getting the story.
That's good. That's
yeah.
Good.
And that's a very difficult thing to do.
That almost makes me happier than anything else, because it's so, you know, you put so many years into writing until you get to a point where you're better at seeing how whether you are putting too much in or not enough, or like basically editing yourself and going back over something and sort of knowing when it's clicking. And it is very satisfying. Yeah. And I've come to a point over the last like 10 years of writing where the just enough, I really enjoy. And you know, the next book I have coming out is a novella. So that's very much an example of that just enough kind of that's there. And I love the idea of sparking things in the reader so that they really are kind of being opened out by, you know, just a word or a line or an image, a smell, you know, and the complete picture happens in their mind. Yeah, that's right.
Yes. Yeah, it's my book now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I made that.
That's right. It's everyone who reads it.
You know? Yeah. And is that your joy? Is that what you look for when you're reading?
Yeah, I think so. I love that complete immersive experience. Yeah. And where you bring it's psychoanalytic in a way, isn't it? I mean, you just, all this stuff comes up from your depths, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a strange, when I talk about this, it actually is quite weird, because with A Superior Spectre, it's like the novel in some ways is about that, because it's like, aren't I as an author invading someone's mind, mm-hmm. you know, just like Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a playful element of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are you being as irresponsible?
I know. Am I? I mean, maybe.
Tell me about your writing experience and your work in publishing and birthing other books.
Yes, yes. I've worked in publishing for 5 years in-house. And before that, I was book reviewer and a book blogger and bookseller. And, you know, I've worked in various parts of the industry. I've been immersed in books my whole adult life. And then, yeah, the last 5 years is as an editor and a publisher. And so it is doing the often high-level work on the manuscripts and acquiring manuscripts. So, getting that really incredible experience of working with writers at that level of, you know, you get the raw material and, well, not raw, they've usually worked on it already for several years, and having a conversation with them and shaping it and, you know, going through the just enough, you know, with them. It's such a privilege, and it's been really amazing. It's really changed my life. Like the last 5 years have been, I don't even have words for it, you know, intense. And, you know, working in publishing is just so, so time consuming as well. But it's been wonderful. And some of the authors that I work with have become friends, and yeah, it's just been amazing.
And Radio Gorgeous listeners will know one of them.
Yes.
Heather Morrison, who wrote The Tattooist of Auschwitz.
That's right.
Yes, and it was highly complimentary about you, obviously.
I love Heather. I mean, we're very close. And that obviously is part of when I say I have no words for the last 5 years. I had no idea I would find a book that would become an enormous international bestseller, because no one, you know, you hope that you will, but yeah, that's just been a wild, wild, wild ride.
And what gave you the courage? Because obviously, as you say, this idea, you know, has been percolating for some time, and you've taken quite some time to work on it. Did you think that you would be taken this far?
My book? No, I mean, you just never know. And this was my fourth attempt at writing a novel, which is what a lot of writers have to do, you know, because you, and also, you know, I was in my 20s, I just didn't know how to write yet. And when I started writing this one, the idea seemed so complex and difficult that I thought this is the one to write. You know, I thought I really had to follow it through.
This will keep me busy.
Yeah, but I just was like, I like a challenge, obviously. And yeah, I had no idea where it would take me. Obviously, you hope, you know, it will end up in public, being published so that people can read it. But I actually really love being with, I'm with a small press in Australia as well, Ventura and Saraband here. And I actually really love the small press experience. It's so personal. So they involve you so much in all the decisions, and they care so much, and it's just been such a wonderful experience. And they care about every single word the way you do. And I think sometimes with bigger houses, it is a bit more of a production line. They also do great work, obviously, but yeah, it's lovely to have that more personal, small.
Does that affect how you are as an editor yourself?
I guess.
That experience?
Yeah. I definitely like to be more like approachable and always contactable, even after the books come out and things like that. But at sometimes you do have to say to yourself, I actually can't keep this up all the time. It actually puts a lot of pressure on you personally, you know.
There's only so many hands I can hold.
That's right. It's true. And yeah, you need balance, or mm-hmm. else you won't do a good job, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. You do have to have some space so that you can approach things and not be exhausted and, yeah, really bring everything to it. Mm-hmm. So getting that balance right is hard.
Yes, exactly. Well, I suppose now you're sort of on equal footing
as well.
You know, you're like, I'm not just an editor, you know.
it is funny how because I'd published reviews and stuff like that, I mean, it was okay that my writers sort of knew I wrote. But yeah, having a book come out, I was really nervous about them reading it, you know, all of the authors, because they're just terrific. And they've only been extremely lovely. And, you know, if they haven't mentioned it, you know, then I absolutely would never ask them, you know, and I would never say, have you read it? You know, just never do that. It's totally, because it might not be their thing anyway. That's the thing as readers, like, we don't just, you know.
Yeah, there's all different kinds of readers, right. And
there's
we read for all different reasons.
All kinds of books. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And so your novella just landed on my desk this morning, Joan Smokes.
I haven't even seen it yet. You're going to have to show me.
Ah, well, it's back at home.
Okay.
It's back at my other desk.
Oh, yes.
So I just received that this morning. Oh, so I'm looking forward to that. Give us a little snippet.
Yes.
Because I did read the back, and young woman who arrives in Vegas and decides, I'm going to be a different person.
Yeah, she's basically starting her life over. You don't really know why, you know, immediately. It's a very engages the senses kind of novella. It's written in sort of very short passages that, you know, make up a kind of hopefully bigger picture. And it can, yeah, it won the Ms. Lexia novella competition, which just blew my mind. And is out in December. It feels like a bonus book because I'm like, I had no idea that would ever become a book. So
I was going to say, you took your time getting started, but
yes,
boom.
But now the second one is already there. But oh God, now I'm going to do a third one.
Exactly. The trifecta.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and if you are over here from Australia.
Yes.
You're going to be up in Edinburgh. You mentioned you attended the Edinburgh Festival before.
Yes.
Where is your knowledge of Scotland from? Because it's...
Yes. So that trip, I was actually in Scotland for 5 months.
Oh, right.
And with my partner at the time, and I stayed in a guest house. I worked in a guest house in Cardew. So that's when I figured out where Leonora was from, and I got her name from a gravestone. And so much of the novel is actually places I've been and stayed. So also where Jeff is in the novel. I will not tell you, but I won't tell anyone, but it is a tiny island reached only by a footbridge where I also have stayed, and it's described very much exactly like that house. And Isla I've been to, and yeah, basically all of the mm-hmm. places in the novel. Yeah. So I've been to Scotland, I've lost track 5 times, I think, or this will be the 5th time. And I just love it. I don't have any Scottish heritage. I have Norwegian heritage. So I feel like it's geographically close. It's northern. the landscape, you know, mm-hmm. there are similarities. But it does
come across in the writing. And you have to be, for this novel to work, because it is...
It's an outsider.
Yes, yeah. Going in, you have to be a writer whose descriptions are evocative. Mm. You know, you have to be. And so it does feel,
that's good.
As a reader, very genuine and that's very good. Very visceral.
That's so, really good. And, you know, I've had some Scottish readers already, obviously, and they've given it a big tick, so that's nice. My partner's half Scottish, and his, you know, his mum was born in Scotland, and his grandma really enjoyed it. So I'll say that's lovely.
Okay, you passed.
It's lovely. I know.
You passed with dour Scots people. That's a big tick.
Yes.
Right. And so, if you want to see and meet Miss Angela Meyer mm-hmm. at the Edinburgh Festival,
yes,
next week it is
on the 18th.
18th of August.
That's right. And then after that, I'll be in Newcastle on the 20th. And Tom and Tal on the 22nd, and then on the 28th in Manchester.
Fantastic. Angela Meyer, thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good luck.
Thank you.
And for more phenomenal women, go to www.radiogorgeous.com.